Safety Committee meeting of County Council to order.
I don't think so.
We have with us today council members in attendance. We have Joe Retta. I'm going to go by the list instead of going around the room because Karen mentioned him twice. What's your pleasure with the minutes of the previous meeting?
Motion approved.
Second.
Motion made seconded to approve the minutes from the previous meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Okay, first on the agenda today is ordinance number 15-007, and it's been read into the record of council, will be voted upon on February 24th. This is to amend the grants budget, appropriate the monetary value of 400 donated laptops, $512,800 to the local law enforcement, 400 laptop computers grant for the Department of Public Safety. Colonel, would anyone want to just give a brief overview as far as that particular grant? I believe this is coming from SLEEF, the way it appears from state.
Yeah, my apologies, Councilman.
That's okay, sir.
I admit that I wasn't paying attention. I was reading a text.
This is the your grant for the $500,000 towards the 400 laptop computers from the state.
That's state grant, sir.
Okay.
And that's just a replacement program for the MDTs that are in the field. It's actually good for all police departments. We don't have to put in for that. It's an automatic thing.
And basically, I guess, you know, we're starting to get into the budget process here. Is that's $500,000 in-car computers that Newcastle County or other law enforcement agencies do not have to purchase.
Exactly. It's a huge cost savings for us in the world of equipment. I mean, it's just very expensive nowadays.
And once again, I think, and we've discussed it before, is that I think that the department, as well as our grant folks within the department, do a tremendous job in keeping track of all this and going after funding to support our day-to-day operations.
Yes, sir, and our hat goes off to our grant writers. So many people don't understand that it's not just a matter of writing a grant. It's actually tracking the grant and then writing the after-action report so that when the auditor comes through, we can show what we did with the money and how. And the last time the auditor was in, I think it's important to point out that they said they need other agencies should be replicating what we're doing as far as reporting and police action.
Very good. Colonel, if you would, our next, are there any questions in reference to the grant on the laptop computers? Okay, hearing none, we'll go to the second item on the agenda and discussion of Newcastle County Police outreach programs. So, Colonel, either yourself or join us at the table.
I'll be deferring to the Special Operations Commander, Captain Quentin Watson, and his sergeant.
Okay. And please feel free to come to the table and join us.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Sergeant Wesley Reynolds, the supervisor for the Community Services Unit. When Captain Watson and Colonel asked me to do the presentation, I know you want to hear of any community outreach or, you know, what is the county police doing that's new as far as community policing. I will tell you that we're not doing anything new. We're doing what we've always done as county police officers. As far as the mission for the department is community policing, so we've always done that aspect of the police. So I'm just going to pass around. I don't want to inundate everyone with a bunch of handouts, but I want to pass around some information about some of the programs we have. That one that's going around is initiative we did called Park Smart, and basically that was we were getting a lot of theft from motor vehicles in Newcastle County parklands this past year, and we wanted to put information out there to the community to say, hey, listen, lock your cars, don't keep your keys on your wheel wells, just to protect yourselves while you're at the park. So that's just one of the initiatives that we had this past year. Another form of outreach we had was the community, pass those around please, the Coot and Can Drive. This initiative came about, I got a call from Captain Watson a year or so ago, and he said, hey, listen, what do we do for the community as far as giving back? We need to come up with something, and this is what we came up with, a Coat and Can Drive. We do that in December, right before Christmas, where we collect cans. The cans get unloaded to the Food Bank of Delaware. We partner with them during this coat drive, and also the breakfast mission. So any leftover coats from that coat drive that we don't give out to the surrounding communities, they go to the breakfast mission. And also this year we were able to give some of the leftovers to one of our other partners, the Noble Law Enforcement Agency. We gave some leftovers to them as well. One of our other forms of outreach is our Explorers Post 905, which is spearheaded by Officer Blythe in the Community Services Unit. These are young men and women that we bring in and basically give them a little snippet of the police career. We use it as a recruiting tool because we do want them to get acquainted with, we want them to get familiar with, and we want them to eventually have a career in law enforcement. So that's another outreach we have. The National Night Out, which is every first or second Tuesday in the month of August, is a big community event that we do every year. We have different vendors. We have the department. The department comes down and we bring out all the stops and basically let the community see, number one, where their money is being spent, you know, how well organized and all the equipment that our department has at our disposal, and we put it on display. And it's a really good community event. If I'm going too fast, just slow me down.
You're doing fine.
Another one that we have, I know Captain Watson and I chatted a little bit about the Ferguson incident and some other incidents that have happened nationwide. And one of the things that when I first got promoted, there was some talk about Citizen Police Academy. It was supposed to happen a couple years ago and this and that. So I told him, I said, we're gonna make this happen. So we've been working on this and it's gonna come to fruition. It's gonna be for 10 weeks starting March 19th, every Thursday from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. And again, we're basically gonna give the community, the residents that live in our communities, the opportunity to come in, see some real good instruction from a lot of our certified police instructors in Newcastle County for the Newcastle County Police. And again, we're gonna give them an opportunity to go through some fingerprint, the process of going through fingerprinting and things like that and other classes. So they get a good idea of, again, what the county police do, what we, you know, and why we take pride in what we do for the county police. So again, that's going to start on March 19th. We're real excited about it. We're just now finalizing the instructors, and we have over, if I'm not mistaken, I think we have over 30 applicants right now that we have to review. We're only looking to put in 25, so we have 30. So we'll review those applicants coming up here shortly. Another initiative that was started by Captain Watson, seat behind me, was the prescription drug drop box. We have one located right now in police headquarters 24 hours a day with a second box to come. And again, this initiative was because we have a lot of residents in Newcastle County that don't know what to do with their leftover prescriptions. So instead of throwing those into the systems and you know, affecting the systems and things like that, came up with this idea and this initiative. If you look on our the NCCPD website, there's a portion of it that flashes. Pretty much, there's a flash feature on there, and this is one of the features on there right now. Another one of our big initiatives, and I'm sure some of you may have seen it, heard about it. We just got a grant to do a big marketing campaign for it. It's the Heroin Alert Program. If you haven't seen it, I'm sure that somebody in your family or someone that you know that has been affected by this epidemic heroin has seen it. ABC Creative Marketing Company. We are set to release the campaign, I believe, March 2nd.
Somewhere
still working on first week of March. So you should start seeing some billboards and things like that that are going to start going up some TV spots and things like that, maybe even some advertisements on some vehicles where we will wrap some vehicles. So again, this is another initiative, the Heroin Alert, that we are excited about. Some of you know Marie Allen has been doing this program for years, and it's just to support her efforts and also to support the unit's efforts and to putting the word out there that heroin is bad. It affects not only the person using, but the families and everyone in the community. I could probably keep going on and on and on. I don't know if you can tell, I love community services, but I mean, that doesn't, these programs that I've just given you a little snippet of, that doesn't include requests for personal safety presentations, requests for, you know, our attendance at community meetings where we go and we address the crime trends and things like that that might be occurring in different areas throughout the county. So that's just a quick overview. If anybody has any questions?
Okay. Captain Watson from the county police. Good afternoon. Wes has just went over a number of things that we do. One of the things, like Wes said, is we just didn't start this prior to Ferguson. We've been doing this throughout the years. I may be biased in saying this, but I think that Newcastle County Police has the best community service unit in the whole entire state, in the tri-state area. You have some units over the years that have paid, I mean, some police departments over the years that have disbanded their community services unit because of staffing. We've had lean times, but one of the things that I'll give credit about with our department is that even in those lean times, we've always maintained our community policing unit because it's vital to the community. When I came back into special ops, I talked a lot to Wes and Sergeant Messner and a bunch of the other guys in there, and I told them that, look, you know, I look at it this way, and the Colonel has heard me say this many, many times before, but I believe in the concept of a bank of community trust. And that's what I think. It's a bank of community trust. And the board members of the bank are your citizens, your community leaders, council, your business leaders. They're all on this board. And every day when we go out there and do our job positively and make positive impacts in the community, we're making deposits in that bank. That's social capital. We continue to make positive deposits in that bank. And one day, if we need to actually make a withdrawal, we'll have enough in that bank that the citizens, council, business leaders will trust us to investigate whether it's a controversial a police officer shooting, some kind of corruption within the county. They'll have confidence that we as a police department can handle that investigation. But we only can do that if the public has trust in us. And so we have to each day keep making those deposits in that bank, because we're going to need to do a withdrawal. We're going to need to do a withdrawal someday. So that's what we constantly keep doing, by doing these outreaches, proactiveness, constantly keeping our finger on the pulse of the community. What happened in Ferguson is different because they lost contact with the community. And so therefore, when they had an incident that happened, you see what happened out of that. We reeled a lot of stuff, diversity issues and all kinds of stuff. We don't have that situation. The Colonel allows me to do a lot of flexibility when we're doing outreach. That's where we did the pillbox and a lot of stuff, because I truly believe that we need to put our fingers right on the pulse. Because once we have that disconnect from the community, a lot of things will happen. And so we're not perfect, but we continue to try, and we'll continue to try again and again and again.
Well, I think that, you know, just to kind of start the conversation here, is that Councilman Hollins had asked at one of our meetings that we kind of get an update, get some information as to, you know, where we are, what we're doing, and are we engaged and everything, and being aware of what's going on around us. And I think when you talk about bias, I think we're all biased towards our county police department. I think we're second to none. And I think that when you hear the enthusiasm, proactive, creative, okay, we have a police department that's empowered the staff and commands to do their job. There's a lot of departments that don't have that in this country, where the command structure empowers its commanders, its people. And that starts from the director, the colonel, all the way down to all of our officers. They're empowered to not only be trained as professionals, but they're empowered to do their job and to work with our communities. And one thing that I think was rather interesting is just the email from February 6th from Sergeant Westland. And that was that reaching out to the council members, to our legislative aides, to recognize the importance of council and its legislative aides have in a community partnership with the police and community leaders, but saying that here I am, contact me. Any questions, anything that we need to do, we'll determine like what the resources are available and whether you actually need to go out and make a presentation or everything. That's teamwork. That's government and our services, serving the people. So from the chair's standpoint, and I know the co-chair will also speak, both of us are co-chairs, but you know, you're continuing to do a fantastic job. We believe in you, and this is just one more thing that just reinstills in our minds that, you know, we're in touch with today's environment and constantly coming up with creative ideas to make it better. So, I mean, nothing but accolades to you folks. So, and with that, Councilman Hollis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for having this on the agenda, and I appreciate all the work that our police department is doing. I don't think we have a problem here in Newcastle County. I ask that we actually have this for discussion because we do have a police department here in Newcastle County, and the things that have happened in America has not only caught the attention of the country itself. When Vice President Joe Biden was here just last month on Dr. King's birthday, he talked about the relationship between police forces around the country in the black community. And in October of 2014, on the 23rd in Orlando, Florida, the International Association of Police Chiefs met to address the issue of some of the things that have been touched on here today. And my concern was really more about the relationship that we're having with all of the communities that the police department serve. And when you read through some of the report that came out of the meeting of the IACP that happened, they talk about communities including people of color, women, youth, lesbian, gay, etc., and on down to people that are forming communities around an ideology, as we saw here across the street from this building when folk came together and they called themselves Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street. Decades ago, we saw it happen in Philadelphia when a group called MOVE resulted in a very tragic situation. So, and I guess that all the things that have been talked about here are very positive things that have been implemented here in Newcastle County under the umbrella of community policing, which is a concept that's been around for 40 years, I believe. But I think today, the reason why there was a meeting in Orlando, and these meetings are happening across the country now, and this report was put together, is a direct result of what happened in Ferguson, what happened in New York, and what happened in Ohio. And I thought that we would have this discussion before anything happened here, not after something happened here, to be more proactive. I can borrow your word. And that's the primary thing I was looking at here. What are we doing? And I think that Captain Watson sort of helped me with his analogy that we are making deposits in these various communities so that if something were to happen, there's a trust. And I think the whole idea is how are we really building trust here? And I don't want to be looking the other way as if we don't have a police department or assuming that, you know, all these things are happening. So the idea is to have some discussion around what are we really doing in a proactive manner. And when you were to, if you were to look at the report, there are pages of recommendations here for police departments, for counties and for municipalities. So that's what I'm hoping that we are really fostering here, and we're not just on automatic pilot and making certain assumptions because we can say nothing has happened here. As the chief of the Delaware State Police said, well, we don't need to do anything here. Nothing has happened. Well, you don't wait until something happened. You want to be proactive and you want to be taking measures. And maybe you can borrow some of the ideas from this report that was put together from the International Association of Chiefs of Police. So that's primarily where I'm coming from with this. And I shared something with Colonel Settings, that something I'd read that was done from Harvard University as relates to force, when is force necessary. And so when I said to the chief at that time that I wanted to have a discussion around this whole idea and some of the things that are going on, some of the perceptions that are out there, which may or may not even be real.
Chief?
Yes, thank you. You know, as I stated before, when I had a conversation with Councilman Streets in regards to Ferguson, and after the director and I met, pulled the command staff in, and the director insisted that we review the Ferguson incident in our own model. What would we have done? How would we have proceeded? Not only do we spending countless hours educating our police officers, not just in the academy, but on the road, not to fall victim to contempt of cop. And for those of you who don't know what that means, it's where, you know, the officer is letting their emotion rule their actions. And, you know, the price that we pay is vigilance. We have to be watching every officer out there, but we also have to do what I cannot say any more poetically than Captain Watson said. We have to be empowering the folks in our community to be a part of the police department. That's why we have our open meetings. That's why we invite council into our meetings. That's why we've been out there communicating. That's why we do everything we do on social media. I'll say this, there are many, many, many agencies in the United States, including some in Delaware, that have learned from Ferguson. They are trying to change their ways. They are reviewing their policies. I can tell you, when Ferguson hit, it's not autopilot. We didn't have to change anything because we'd already been doing everything right as a community police department. And that same group that met in Orlando, not only was I there, the Newcastle County Police Department was recognized as one of the top 10 agencies in the United States for being a proactive and absolutely community-oriented agency. And that, but we're always open to suggestions, sir. And I, as I've said many, many times before, I will say it again. Tuesday morning, 9 a.m., the police department is exposed to what you will see, every single resource, every badge, every officer. They may not be in the room, but you'll know where we're putting every single man and woman that wears this uniform, what they're doing that week and the week after. And if you can find somebody hiding in that police department, I'll give you $20.
I did, if I could, just want to touch on one program that the director and Captain Watson, we chatted about this. Sergeant Trudeau, the Latin Officers Association of Noble and Community Services, kind of in the infancy stages of planning a forum, basically, with some young teenager, young adults, and police officers. It's going to be called the Law and You. I don't have any literature on it because it's still in the planning stages and still being prepared. So you can look for that coming, because what that is designed to do is to open that dialogue up with some of the minority, young adults throughout Newcastle County, the city of Wilmington, and I think the plan is to get 15 kids from each jurisdiction to join into this conversation about how we can police better, and how can we get the citizens to report things to police and things like that. So that's going to be part of that dialogue. So I'll make sure that I'll get you that information once it's kind of solidified.
Thank you very much.
Code Chairman Street.
Well, I'm going to be brief because I'm a little bit frustrated. When our police officers shot and killed a young man in Newark, I got caught. Young man got shot and killed on Memorial Drive. Wasn't 10 minutes, I got the call. So I've been on the battlefield, worked with the community, done everything we could in those two major incidents to see to it that things didn't get disrupted. When it came time to fight and say what I felt was wrong in terms of policies and procedures, I took the hit. Okay, and everybody mad at me, but everything I do and don't do as it relates to the seriousness of this matter, I do for good cause and do for a reason. And far as folks coming from Harvard, Yale, Orlando, West Virginia, I don't care, because they don't know where Rose Gate is, they don't know where Edgemoor Gardens is, they don't know where Kemerton is, they don't know where Sparrow Run is, and it's our police department that has to address all those areas and at the same time have a working relationship with the community. And I think, especially during this administration, our department has gone above and beyond in terms of being proactive, not reactive, and also changing policy. I wasn't in office a New York minute and got a complaint about a woman having to lay down in the parking lot on Lancaster Avenue next to the Mercedes deal. I dealt with that. When we turned the dog loose on the little girl, a teenager in Dunleavy, I dealt with that. But we changed policies, we changed procedures, and in my opinion, this department is being responsive as it can possibly be under the circumstances. And as soon as Ferguson happened, I made the suggestion that we go one step beyond and we form a police community advisory council, that we involve young people, and that's in process, not only with young people, but another police advisory council staying all by itself. So, in my opinion, we're right on point, and that's not going to make it perfect. But quite frankly, I'm not looking to experts throughout the country. I'm looking to the experts sitting right here. And I think we have it, and I think they're doing an outstanding job. And when you're on the battlefield and you're in the thick of it, and you take the complaints, and when all hell breaks loose, you make a decision to do what you think's right, regardless of what folks think. It's a little exasperating if folks want to come at the 11th hour and start talking about what they're doing in other jurisdictions.
Other members of council? Captain Sergeant, we appreciate it very much. Colonel, thank you for the update. And we'll go into our update on our County Police Academy, Colonel Setti.
Again, I think it's important to recognize council's foresight in allowing the overhire of 5 additional officers in the last academy, as my fear was the attrition rate would affect the agency, and it has. So with 26 qualified, diverse candidates ready to graduate on the 12th of March, we're still down 11 right now. So by the time this academy finishes out, we'll more than likely hit an attrition rate of 5%. Mm. So I want to remind everyone of that, as I have in the past, because we're going to be putting another academy in to compensate for that attrition rate. And we're going to have to do another overhire. With 56 police officers eligible for retirement right this minute, mm. they are finding jobs. The job market for county police is hardening at a compelling rate. And if everyone realizes you're hiring a retired county cop, you're getting a bargain. You're getting a hard worker and an investigator all rolled into one. So they keep snapping them up, the AG's office, the sheriff's, and so forth and so on. So the next overhire may be 10. The request may be for 10. And with 56 eligible for retirement, I guarantee you we will not get through that academy before the attrition rate levels us out. And if we can just graduate and I can have one day where I can say I have my authorized strength of 380, I'll be a happy man for about 7 minutes. March 12th is the graduation. Of course, everyone has their invitation, and we are hoping to see council, as we cannot do what we do without you.
Well, I think just to lead off a comment on this is that, you know, I know that everyone's aware that this council has been extremely supportive of not only overfilling, but recognizing the fact that we're at a critical point in county history as far as the numbers of authorized strength. And you know, it's very difficult sometimes to come to grips with the fact that we can't even get up to our authorized strength today when we know that we need even more than that authorized strength. You know, I guess when you talk about another academy and, you know, adding 10, I think that we all are aware and should be reminded the fact that through the COPS program, through federal funding, creative type management, our police department has been able to get federal funds to support, at least for a couple years, the hiring of new officers. And so I think that what we've got to be aware of as a council is that if we were to double the academy, you're looking at probably about a third, if not more, of that academy being funded for the first couple years through federal dollars.
$600,000 last year, sir, COPS grants money. This year we will go after a historic number. We're going to go after the maximum yield of the COPS grant allowable is 17 officers. So based on, you know, the Director Bryant went down to Washington, D.C. and spoke to the head of the COPS office. He talked about the again, our community policing efforts and the progressive policing model we use and our focus on technology. And he said, you're a fool not to put in for all 17. He said, that's the max you can get. And he said, the programs you're running, you should put in for 17. It's a tall order, but as you see from the 2013 numbers to the 2014 numbers, we're doing well. But in 2014, what we did is we held on to our successes from 2013. If we want to see continued decreases from where we are now,
We've completely maximized our deployment strategy and our programs. We are at the point, first time I've had to say this, is we actually need to increase our authorized strength. And the COPS grant helps us do that, sir.
And I think that's the point of what I'm trying to say here, is the fact that, you know, by the end of the two-year investment in federal monies in the COPS program that you've worked on and been able to accomplish, by the end of that period, just in attrition alone, okay, the funding in our operating budget is there to pick up those police officers and then some. So from my perspective and as a co-chair, I think that 10 may not be a high enough number to overfill. I think, you know, you're gonna have some attrition rate in the academy, as you know, but I think that it's a very difficult process today to find good qualified candidates.
It's very difficult, sir.
And you've got folks that are working full-time, part-time people that are working full-time that have retired from law enforcement.
Correct.
And so the fact of the matter is, I'm not too sure that we shouldn't be looking at this point in time of taking an academy and adding, overfilling it more than just 10 folks. With that, I'm gonna go to Co-Chairman Street, because we have a lot of conversations about these things.
Yes, sir.
Co-Chairman?
Well, I'm gonna go all the way back to then County Executive Coons administration, and my magic number for authorized strength was 500. It was 500 then, it's 500 now. Consistent with the conversation we just had about prevention, one of the questions I have, and I don't want you to feel like I'm blindsided, so don't answer me today, but as we're bringing on these new officers and we're bringing in academies, I think we need to be strategic in terms of where we place them, how we place them. My point being, you look at the news reports, you look at the news releases. Mm-hmm. Got a shooting somewhere almost every day. And then you have the tax areas and the targeted areas, and then those high crime areas. I just don't think it's a good idea to continue to go into those areas, patrol those areas in one-man cars. And, you know, there have been other jurisdictions that have put 2, 3 in D.C. when they went to take back 14th Street, put 4 officers in the car, left room for the shotgun. But my critical point being, I think it's a terrible idea, conceptually, to take rookies coming onto the force and to place them in those high crime areas, in those tax areas, in police vehicles by themselves. So just in terms, I want to talk about it, I want you to answer me today, but I want to come back to it in terms of policies and procedures, because if you've got 2 officers in a car in a high crime situation where there may be a situation, the response is going to be one way. If you've got 3 officers, it's going to be one way. If you've got 1 officer, it's going to be another way. And if you've got a trained officer who happens to be a rookie in an area that, in a neighborhood that is unfamiliar to he or she, that increases the likelihood of a catastrophic situation. So in terms of the prevention end, I just want to talk about that in terms of policy procedure, and it's all related to the authorized strength.
And just one final comment, and then we'll open it up to certainly other council members saying that. Like I say, Jay and I talk a lot about the different things that our public safety is doing as co-chairs of public safety, and we try to work very closely with the leadership of public safety, as does the other chairs, be it land use or finance. And I think that one of the things we've got to keep ever present in our mind is, with attrition comes loss of institutional knowledge. With attrition, you've got to look at sustaining the organization in the future. So it is really key and critical today to start to build the numbers, start to get the numbers. And like Jay's saying, when you have folks that are coming out of an academy, you still want the best of the best there that's got the institutional knowledge, the experience to be there to mentor them, to do the FTO programs and to be there for them, so that they can carry on and sustain the organization in the future. So what I'm hearing is, if we're able to get 17 positions out of the federal government, then maybe we should be overfilling the academy by 17.
Well,
and it's just food for thought. I know it's something
noted,
I think,
sir,
that we have got to take some, you know, we've supported, but I think we need to start taking some giant steps and getting to where we need to be. And with that, I want to go to other councilmen because Jay and I have said enough for right now. Councilman Cartier?
Yes, great.
Sorry. Councilman, go ahead. Please excuse me because Councilman Smiley had his hand up before.
No, go ahead.
No. Please, okay. Councilman.
I just want to know, I apologize for not remembering, but just to bring everything into focus. Does anyone have, how many applicants did you have to go through this last time to fill the academy?
On average, I don't have the numbers in front of me, sir. I actually just looking at my phone, going through some other numbers about how much we pulled down in grants, because I thought it was worth mentioning. But to answer your question, it's been my experience that it takes about 500 candidates to find 20 qualified people. We will not lower our standards. We cannot do that. We cannot change who we accept as a county police officer. They have to be, we focus on diversity. And we focus on, people with a real true interest and passion for doing this job. And by the time, you go through the hiring process, 6 months, a police academy, which is a crucible, 6 months, and then the first 3 months on the road, obviously they're riding with a senior officer to pass on knowledge and skill sets. It's 15, 16 months to mint a police officer. And it takes about 500 applicants to find 20 qualified folks.
So I know that's what it was in the past. I just wanted to keep that in focus that when we do two academies, we've gone through 1,000 people and move them out of the way. Now we got to find another.
And that's why we constantly are back at the military's door. We're back at the colleges. We're down in Dover. We're at Del Tech. We're at University of Delaware. Delaware University. Just beating the bushes, trying to find the best of the best. I mean, and when I came on quite some time ago, it was different. There were 1,000 applicants for 15 positions. People wanted to be police officers, but now it's not the interest has dropped off at all.
And I know how hard it is because I always go back to the phone call I got 6 or 7 years ago where a gentleman claimed he was being denied for certain reasons. And I went out and met with him. And I went and met with the chief at that time, and then went back to him. And the reason he was denied was, it was his position, it was nobody's business why he lost his last job. Well, not acceptable. I mean, you have things like that. So I know how...
It is very difficult.
Tough it is, and I just like us to keep the focus on how difficult it is to find... We say you're only getting 20 officers. But it's a lot of work to get to that.
It's a lot of work.
I appreciate that.
We put our guys through a lot to find those officers. And I'd love to overhire by 17, but my guess would be, Councilman, if you add 17 to the 11 vacancies, you wouldn't find 27 qualified folks by June 1st. When we should kick off the next academy by June 1st.
But if you were authorized, you could try.
Certainly could try. I'd love to be authorized. Would love both.
Excellent points that Councilman Smiley made, and it all coincides with this conversation, and the importance of everything. Councilman Cartier?
I want to continue to go back to a theme that I've been bringing to the table in terms of not only, the police, but our public safety function in general, and that is, giving our veterans, our qualified veterans, an opportunity to get involved with our public safety function, being paramedics, or the police department. The American Army is going to be shrinking for the foreseeable future, and we have, by all accounts, lots of qualified people coming out of the military who could at least apply and have a good shot at becoming a part of our paramedic or police department. I just want to make sure that you continue to reach out to, our newly minted veterans coming out who have a lot of the training we probably need.
As a person who served, I'm a big believer in that. Captain Watson, United States Marine Corps, we look for guys coming out of the service, guys and gals, and as a matter of fact, it's the one area where we waive one of our requirements, which is the college credits are waived. If you made the rank of E5 in any branch of the military, we will waive your credits and hire you because it's the equivalent. The schools that you go to, the classes and tests that you take to become an E5 in any branch of the service is the equivalent of at least 90 college credits. A little bit more life experience, by the way.
Councilman Rudd.
Thank you. Chief, I know you talked about the academy, you know, and I believe I brought it up before about ready cops. And part of the question is, when we go after the ready cops, how many of them actually stay with us?
You know, again, we take the best of the best, and we've done that. And to give you an answer, two of the ready cops that I can think of right off the top of my head are both from Wilmington. And not only did they stay, they've been promoted to sergeant because they're quality officers. And we've taken officers from other folks. But once you do that and you kind of, you know, cherry pick and take the best guys, you know, it's only a one-time thing because it only applies to Delaware. When you start doing out-of-state ready cops, they have to meet Delaware COPT, Council on Police Training. So they might as well just go through an academy. Well, in Delaware, do we still look at other agencies without, you know, really kind of upsetting the apple cart with other chiefs? Yes, we do. But we prefer that they seek us out. We don't want chiefs calling and saying, thanks for stealing our cops, you know, so, which happens.
So the pool's actually small.
Yeah. The last thing I'd like to mention, sir, if you don't mind, is I was looking at the numbers. You know, as we stare down this next budget cycle, I think it's important to note, I'm mentioning her for a second time in this meeting, but I think it's important, Lori Kane, keeping everything straight for us in the world of grants. So $225,000 in overtime last year from JAG, 200 some, maybe 50,000, can't be off by much on that, from the funds to combat violent crime. And as I've stated earlier, all those monies, every single dollar has to be spent in a very particular way, and they come out and they audit that and they look at your after action reports. You can't say I paid the following officers to go and do nothing. They will take that money from you. And she just does a great job, and our cops do a great job. And it's a $500,000 that we would have to come up with to pay our overtime and police the tax areas if we weren't doing this system. So just again, hats off to Lord.
Did you, when I know it was announced in an email and be announced publicly, but your promotion, Corporal Wilson?
Yes, we promoted a longtime forensic computer detective to the rank of sergeant, and it's not unusual to promote someone to the rank of sergeant that's earned it. What's unusual about Jason Wilson is it's the first time someone has ever been put in charge of the actual computer forensic units. As technology continues to challenge us and aid us, we have to invest in technology. So not only is he promoted, he will maintain his position in the computer forensics lab at police headquarters.
Any other counsel on the police side? Co-Chairman Street? All right. Colonel and staff, we thank you very much, Councilman Hollins, for attending.
Well, there's another item on the agenda. I wanted to have a comment on the other.
Okay. Yeah, we were working down to the paramedic class, and I guess we
have... Sure, I can wait until other.
Oh, okay. Okay. Not a problem. Did you want to go now, or you want to wait till other?
No.
You all right?
Okay. No, I'm fine.
Okay. All right. Thank you for the police staff, and... I guess at this point in time, we'll go to item number 6, which is the update on the paramedic class.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Dan Cedor, Assistant Chief with the County Paramedics. As I'm sure most of you are aware, the paramedics have continued through their academy education. They are just now finishing up. They've been testing, passing their national registry. We've got a couple of people left that need some remediation. So we fully expect to have 15 paramedics at our graduation ceremony, February 4th. And if you haven't gotten invitations, you will have them shortly. So we're looking forward to getting
March
14th,
March
4th.
February.
March 4th. February 4th already coming up. It's been a fast month.
That's a good way.
So March 4th, yes, we will be having graduation for those 15 paramedic recruits. And then they will start their field training process with FTOs from our department. The other thing that I wanted to make that's actually a point I wanted to make that's a little bit earlier on our calendars and agendas is our third annual cardiac arrest survivors event, which is going to be the 25th of this month. That's a Wednesday, and that's going to be at the Tatnall School. For those of you that are familiar with the event or maybe come to it before, What we do as an agency is we invite back the cardiac arrest survivors who have left the hospital with the highest level of mental and physical capacity. So they essentially walk out of the hospital. These aren't the only people that have survived cardiac arrest, but they have that highest capacity out there. And the event brings together the providers who were involved in the pre-hospital care of that patient, and they could be anyone from bystanders to police officers, firefighters, paramedics, etc. So oftentimes it is the first time that these survivors, these patients, get an opportunity to hear what happened on the day that they died. And so it's a very powerful program. Last year we had a gentleman come back from Pittsburgh. He and his family drove that day from Pittsburgh to make the event. He said he would not have missed it for anything. So he's very pleased to be there. Great opportunity for all the providers, and we give out recognition to all the providers that were involved in the patient's care. And just as an aside, we just recently, within the past 2 weeks, we had an incident outside of Newark up there by White Clay Creek State Park where a jogger was running along the road, collapsed. Somebody driving by saw the person fall, thought maybe they just hurt themselves, got out, realized the gentleman was in cardiac arrest, started CPR, called 911, somebody else stopped, a nurse stopped, a park ranger ended up stopping with a defibrillator, ended up shocking this patient. By the time our paramedics got to the scene, the guy had pulses back, and they stabilized him further, took him to the hospital, and he is probably going to walk out of the hospital within a couple of days. So that's just kind of a great classic example of that chain of survival that you always hear about and that we talk about along with American Heart, and how offering CPR to the community can have a powerful impact on the outcomes of these types of patients. So one of our endeavors is to try to get more people in the community involved in doing bystander CPR, hands-only CPR. Nobody wants to do, you know, the kinds of things, mouth-to-mouth or whatever. We're just trying to encourage people to do chest compressions on a patient that may have collapsed in front of them. But so later this month, we'll be recognizing those who were involved in those kinds of incidents, and we hope to have 20-some patients return that day to hear their story and get a chance to meet the people that were involved in that care. So,
fantastic. Questions or any input from members of council? I guess before you sit down, I think that one of the things that the council was adamant about was about, you know, the paramedic class and reaching out to folks and creating more opportunity for diverse community and everything. And I think in this particular class, you folks have worked extremely hard to begin accomplishing that goal. And, you know, you deserve a lot of credit, and I think all of us look forward to this class graduating.
Well, it was a huge undertaking, and, you know, I've got to actually thank the director and the executive for all their support in bringing a lot of resources together to make that happen. As you know, we were extremely proactive in getting out in the community. The chief indicated earlier the number of applicants that you have to even have a small pool of people. We had over 600 applicants to have a class of 15 people. That's difficult. I appreciate the effort that goes into that. I'll also dovetail on the comments the chief made with regards to staffing. We're in similar positions. There's old guys like me who have been here since the early 80s, and we're getting ready to retire. There's a bunch of us getting ready to retire. So last year we were fortunate enough to get the support of council and county government to overfill by 7 positions. We would like to be able to continue to do that because we're going to see more and more people leaving the agency. And Councilman Bell, you made an excellent point when you talk about that, you know, that kind of dearth of institutional knowledge that happens when people leave. So we've been taking steps with some increased budget items. We've been taking steps to build our leadership cadre, to get people to training, to get them to understand not only what it takes to be a paramedic, but what does it take to run the agency? And we're hoping that we don't have that, you know, that hole when people start retiring, leaving. But it's somewhat inevitable, honestly. So.
No, that's great. Great to hear. Council? Councilman Cartier?
I know we were talking about, you know, the people have survived heart attacks, and it's truly amazing with the technology we have today how many we can save when years ago that didn't happen. But I just want to recognize, you know, other circumstances where our county paramedics, you know, are going to horrendous auto accident scenes. I can tell you my district in the I-495 and 495 corridors, these are generally very high speed accidents. Unfortunately, many people are not alive when you arrive, and you have to deal with that and the aftermath, which is I don't know how you do it. I wouldn't do it. I couldn't be paid enough to do it. And to have individuals like this who show up, do their job, do their duty, are sensitive to the victims of these, you know, accidents. And I just want to recall another incident where an industrial sort of accident where in the sewer project on Governor Prince, we had a caisson 30 feet in the hole. A worker was trapped under a bucket that came loose from an excavator. One of our paramedics went down that hole, stabilized that individual until they could be extricated, and are now alive today because of quick thinking and heroism of our female paramedic. And people don't really understand everything you do. I think it's a job that a lot of people don't recognize the value of it, but I certainly do, members of this council, whatever we can do to make sure you're staffed properly and have adequate resources, you know, you always can come to us.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
And I was at that particular incident you spoke of on the Governor Prince, and that was a long afternoon. But you bring up another good point, too, and that's actually part of the discussion we had with the county executive the other day, and it spoke about burnout. And, you know, when you see the kinds of things that our personnel see day in and day out, sometimes it's difficult to step back and take a breath and realize what you've just seen or the impact that particular incident is going to have on some family member or you know, some member of the community. And that's another thing that we clearly have to be concerned about. I mean, not everybody's going to make it to retirement. That's just a fact of life. Some people are just going to say, I've had enough, I'm going to step back and take another path. That's okay, too. But I do appreciate your comments on the job we did.
Mm-hmm. Co-Chairman Street.
I'm just going to reemphasize the fact that every shooting, every murder, whether it's in the county, whether it's in the city, our paramedics are one of the same. For the shooting victims who survive, a lot of it has to do with decisions that our paramedics make and things that are done right there in the field. Every time somebody gets hit by a train, it's our paramedics that are at the scene having to deal with that. So, and I raised all that cane and said all this, that, and the other, and then I took a half a day with Kenny Dunn, and it was 11 something. We've been in 3 or 4 situations, and I'm like, no, I'm done with you. You made your point. I'm not riding with you this time. See, you made your point, and I'm not coming back. I got it. So I got it.
I won't make you ride with him again.
Okay.
I wouldn't ride with him.
Now, and kind of coincides with the conversation. It's a team. Public safety is a team of public safety professionals. And as Chief Good can attest, I mean, when you look at situations where someone is trapped, whether it be under a piece of equipment or in a trench that's collapsed, I mean, there's specialized units that respond. We're blessed in the county and the city to have specialized units for collapse rescue. The case that was, again, in the paper from January from the firefighter from Christiana, who's a career firefighter also. He's part of a Swiftwater rescue team. He's trained. He was equipped with equipment by this county. The county funded and supported Swiftwater rescue and the claps you and things like that. So it really is a partnership. It really is. Any other question? Input? Okay. With that, thank you, sir.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
The time. We'll go to other. Councilman, President Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know there's everyone here has heard it over and over again and around the city of Wilmington, all the meetings that have taken place as relates to the violence in the city of Wilmington. The governor and the mayor has all come together with the county executive and this joint collaboration. But I just want to mention again, I know you've all read it, that the commission that was established is headed up by our public safety director, Joe Bryant, along with the Homeland Security Director, and again, Newcastle County is in the lead in this collaboration to make certain that we are offering our resources to the citizens in the city of Wilmington. And I just want to mention, especially over the weekend, I guess all council members received the report from the county executive that our police officers were, in fact, in the city of Wilmington over the weekend. Did what I believe to be an outstanding job. They were in areas of Wilmington that I happen to have the pleasure of representing, Jessup Street, Concord Avenue, Washington Street, Northeast Boulevard, and I read that report and was very pleased. I'm certain that the citizens of the city of Wilmington as well as the Wilmington Police Department appreciate the assistance from the Newcastle County Police Department. So I just want to express my appreciation to the county executive as well as our police department for being present in the city of Wilmington to address the violence there straight up and face up and head on.
Thank you, Councilman. Other items for discussion? Co-Chairman Street.
Well, I have to totally agree with what was said. As a matter of fact, he stole my thunder. And I tried to get it in. That's neither here nor there. I agree with it. I think that the leadership that we're offering and the fact that our public safety director is a part of that task force, I think I'm more optimistic now that it's going to be successful than I've been over the last 10 years that I've been screaming about this. I started out, I wasn't in office a New York minute in November, and in November I requested the joint letter go out to talk about multi-jurisdictional task force. Newsweek quoted me correctly in saying that I think it's going to take more than a homicide unit in the city of Wilmington to resolve this problem. It's out of hand. So I'm looking forward to the plan. I'm excited about what's being done right now in the interim, and there has been disruption with Operation Disrupt, and I hope it continues to disrupt. And I think that we have an increased likelihood that we'll be successful at this point, more so than before. I am, however, exasperated less about the fact that key decision makers and critical decision makers in key areas didn't really care until the business community complained. Okay, but all those shootings, you know, in on Broome Street in my district, you come in and you kill a 16-year-old on Friday, and you come back and you shoot up the same house on Sunday, and you think it's just okay, and you're gonna walk away from that. Well, I think that what happened in January is a change agent. I think it's a turn of events, and I'm optimistic and. About what's going to happen, and I'm glad all the players are at the table now. But I'm going to say it again, I'm going to keep on saying it. There's too many folks, too many positions of responsibility and authority who really didn't care about my kids shooting each other until the business community complained. But however we got there, we're there now, and I'm going to work with whoever wants to work to help resolve this problem, because I don't think there's anything more important right now to the city of Wilmington, to Newcastle County, and to the state of Delaware. I remember, it's like we got the problem here, they're shooting in Dover, they're shooting in Seaford. So if we set the tone and tenor here for resolution, maybe we'll carry on throughout the state. And I am really optimistic to the point where I think it may be something that we can look at as something other jurisdictions can look at in terms of resolution. because this is a nationwide problem.
Thank you, Councilman. One other comment, under other, and that is that, you know, when you talk about the city and everything, we're we welcome Chief Good from our Wilmington Fire Department here, and Chief graduated a fire academy over the weekend, and you know, we wish you well with the new firefighters and everything, and you're always welcome here.
Thank you, sir. It would be mine.
Not at all.
Please, the mic. I came in today, we actually, because one of the things that we've said over the last 2 years is that we wanted to come out and be able to participate more, a little bit more, and myself have gotten busy and I kind of lost focus and I haven't been to more meetings, so I apologize. We'll definitely come to more meetings, or you'll see my aide, Captain Porter, in the meeting representing me if we're having meetings that we're bouncing back and forth from. But I wanted to thank Newcastle County because without Newcastle County, we would not have been able to graduate those 19 individuals that graduated this week. And there's no reason for us to try to hide it or shadow or cover it up any other way. It is because of Newcastle County, County Council, as well as the executive, who were able to support us in the manner that we needed to be able to put us in the position we are today. Today we are at 100% strength. We'll talk about tomorrow. But as you know, and we've already heard, attrition rates drop out. We will be dropping out of several individuals that we're moving on to better and better things in their livelihoods. Right now, the Wilmington Fire Department is going through another transition. In the last 18 months, we have supported Newcastle County Fire Service more than we have in the past 18 years. We've noticed some problems, some glitches in the way that we are supporting, and we're trying to address them immediately. As we address them, I'm sure there's gonna be some miscommunications in how it's being done, but we're gonna work on trying to fix that overall. The overall goal for the city of Wilmington, as well as Newcastle County, is to take and work together. Unfortunately, last night we had a fatal fire that was on Market Street that was actually in the county. It was a county response. Wilmington did go and assist. We assisted a little bit later, but one of the things we wanna work on doing is trying to build a stronger beneficial mutual aid agreement for areas right around the city that benefit by us being all that close. And so we're looking to get assistance in doing that. You know, the county takes and gives us appropriations for us to operate. We operate within the county all the time and doing different things, our special operations, our marine units, we'll work, continue to work. We're gonna change how we do it from an automatic run card to a special request so that we can better prepare our companies to come out. And that's where you'll probably hear a lot of miscommunications on how we do things, but it's not gonna change that we are doing those things. We've done it in the past 18 months more than we ever had in the past 18 years, as I said before, and we're looking to grow that even more so. But I really wanted to come out and just talk about those 19 recruits. You know, out of those 19 recruits, 9 from the city, and that's the most city residents that have been hired in the city of Wilmington Fire Department over the past 10 years. But the rest of them, other than one, all came from Newcastle County. And they are members of Newcastle County Fire. Some were not, some were medics. And it's so much that we got from you. Now they're city residents now, they better be. Can't claim them anymore. But we're taking them and putting them underneath our belt, and we're going to work with them. So again, I just want to come and thank you all for everything that you've done to help us, and will continue to help us. All right, thank you.
Thank you. You're absolutely welcome, Chief. Okay, any other public comment?
I need a vacation.
Okay, hearing no public comment.
Motion to adjourn.
Motion made, second to adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So carried.
We remember the number.